What you're about to listen to was originally broadcast on 98.5 Sunshine FM, Perth, Western Australia. For more details, go to the website sunshinefm.ws.
Very good morning, Genevieve Milnes.
Good morning, Rodney. How are you today?
I'm well.
It's good. And what have you been doing lately?
Oh, I've been keeping very busy. I've been thumping away at the desk there. You would have noticed a slight pause when the microphone did not want to come on. But we've sorted it now. We can talk.
We have sorted that. That's very funny.
I think I broke it, but that's okay. We won't be able to turn the microphone off later.
But you didn't even panic, Rodney. That was fantastic.
No, just keep thumping. It's going to work eventually.
Oh, very good indeed. Look, you know, I was talking about my exercise and diet routine, if you recall, lately, last week.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I'm still doing it, and it's fantastic. And I feel terrific.
Good.
I feel great. I feel the best I've felt in years.
And knowing you, that means that that'll give you an opportunity to pack even more into your
week. That's what I said to I'm on this machine that it's a de-stressing machine or something, and I lie on this mat, and it's got this rhythm that sort of regulates you. I can't even explain the whole thing. Haven't read the book properly, but I feel terrific. And apparently I was on this high rate at 9.3 or something, and that was to energize a person. And I said, I don't think I need that. I think I need to be on the very lowest one, which is the sleep one. So I've put myself on the lowest one. So hopefully, you know, I'll get some more sleep.
Oh, good.
Mm. So, yeah, now I've been buzzing around with all this extra energy and doing all sorts of things. And, you know, I mean, it's funny, though, at night, which is the time that I, you know, really like to get active sometimes, and I think, oh, what can I do? You know, can I clean? I think, no, don't clean. That's terrible. Cleaning's always there. So I've been looking at my books lately and just thinking, I really need to organise my books properly and have a library that I can really be proud of at home. The one at work is fine, but that's because the students help me to organise that. But the one at home is really messy. Do you have a lot of books?
I do, and I don't make nearly enough time to read through them.
I'm not worried about reading them. I just want to organise them. It's funny, though. I do like not so much to sit down and read the book. I just love books.
Mm-hmm.
I've just grown up with this love of books. I think my mother used to send me off when there was a job to do. She'd say, oh, Jen, can you go and dust the bookshelves? Well, the bookshelves were these, you know, three quite long shelves of books with all of, you know, Dad's books and Mum's books and all of that sort of thing, and all the, you know, picture books and story books. And I'd pull the armchair out and just sit neatly behind the armchair so Mum couldn't see me, and then just pull all the books out and go through them and put them into little piles and, you know, get the old art book out and... Look, I especially remember the art book because it had the picture of the Turkish bathers in it. You know, I don't know who painted that one, but all these naked women in this painting, and I used to think, oh my goodness, look at that. Who would allow a child like me to have this art book? But, you know, it's given me a real love of art to have had those art books that Mum and Dad had in those bottom shelves.
Okay.
So there we go. So you can see how much energy I've got. I just can't stop talking to
them. So it's not just having the books, but you do like to go through the books as well.
Oh, I do. I love pictures as well. So the picture books were fantastic.
You like books with pictures.
Especially children's books. I love children's books. And yeah, just collecting the old classics and all of that, you know.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, over the last few weeks, we've been looking at borderline personality disorder. And just wrapping that up this morning, we do have a question from a listener who says that in the program you've been mentioning CBT, but do you have an opinion on DBT, group and individual therapy for borderline personality disorder? Now, maybe you need to just explain what CBT and DBT are. We've talked a lot about CBT, but
CBT,
what's the difference?
Cognitive behaviour therapy, and dialectical dialectical behaviour therapy. It is dialectical is a certain approach to, and I've just forgotten the therapist's name, to borderline personality disorder, and it is a wonderful approach, and I believe it's happening, especially in the changes course at the Royal Perth Hospital.
Okay.
I believe there's a group there that's doing something along those lines. I'm not sure if it's that one exactly, but certainly around Perth, you can find these groups, or you can find therapists who use DBT, and that's been shown by the research to be very effective over 12 months or longer. And they use CBT, of course, in that, as well as some other exercises, and it's a whole program. Yeah.
Okay, today we're moving on to a different subject, because it's not so much a personality disorder as a condition, or some would say a disease, and that is schizophrenia.
Yes, I thought we'd look at schizophrenia. Before we actually looked at the personality disorders, there are three that really relate to schizophrenia. The first one was schizotypal or schizotypal, and then schizoid, and then the borderline personality disorder that we've already looked at. But today I wanted to go over this schizophrenia as a disease or a condition before we actually come to those personality disorders. Basically that's what, you know, sort of just to lay the groundwork a little bit.
It's a word that's bandied about a bit, but what does it actually mean?
Well, it is discussed as if it's a single disorder or condition, but it includes a group of disorders, patients with schizophrenia show differing clinical presentations, and therefore there are different treatment responses and courses of the illness. And there's so much written on schizophrenia, and I've just tried to draw a few strands here, but according to something called the stress diathesis model, for the integration of biological, psychosocial and environmental factors, a person can have a specific vulnerability what's another word for vulnerability, Rodney? Help me there. Like they're more more likely to get something.
I guess we're talking here about there's a likelihood of these things happening if there's the right triggers.
Yes.
And so that it can be latent in a number of people, but unless the right triggers come along, it's never going to come to the surface, is it?
Certainly. And so that when they're acted on by a stressful influence, then that allows the symptoms of schizophrenia to develop. So if they have this vulnerability. The stresses can be biological, you know, or environmental, or both. So, for example, if you get an infection in the biological case, or you have some psychological sort of stressful family situation, or the death of a close relative, then you're vulnerable, okay? So the biological basis of this diathesis can be further shaped by things like substance abuse and psychosocial stress and trauma. So we're looking here, look, it's really, is very wide, and really it's difficult to say what is the cause. You know, if someone says, look, I have a relative with schizophrenia, we really would have to look at that person's history, that person's vulnerabilities, for example, and to say, you know, what are the stresses that have been in this person's life?
Okay, let's look a bit more deeply at it in just a moment. We'll take a break. We'll come back. If you'd like to join the conversation this morning, 94841985 is our phone number, or you could email us mornings@sunshinefm.ws. That'll get us either via email or Microsoft Messenger. But the phone number, 94841985. Rodney Olson here, chatting with Genevieve Milnes today, looking at the subject of schizophrenia, and we've really just begun to touch on what schizophrenia is all about. I guess we need to look at what are some of the symptoms behind it.
Okay, now the symptoms, I just wanted to comment first that the course of schizophrenia is usually looking back into a person's history, in their teens, adolescent years. You might see a pattern of symptoms that you could say afterwards you know, looking back, you could say, well, that was actually the beginning of it before any psychosis came into it. So we call that the prodromal stage, and there's the, and so that is the lead up to what we call a full blown schizophrenia or psychotic episodes. Now, some of the criteria or some of the symptoms. Now, there are a whole lot of different systems and diagnostic criteria, but let me take you through some of those. For example, one of those might be thought broadcasting. Okay, that is, you know, people can hear my thoughts or I can hear other people's thoughts, delusions of being controlled or influenced, other bizarre delusions or multiple delusions, all those things going on at once, perhaps delusions that last a month and they're not just sort of jealousy or persecution. If they're accompanied by hallucinations of any type for at least a week, so we say that would be a diagnostic criteria. If you're hearing voices in which either a voice keeps up a running commentary on your behaviour or thoughts as they occur, or two or more voices that are conversing with each other. Hallucinations of any type throughout the day for several days. And then definite instances of marked formal thought disorders, accompanied by inappropriate or a blunted affect. That is, you know, your emotions are blunted, and or accompanied by delusions or hallucinations. So we've got some really quite complex things happening there. Other things, perhaps changes in personality, which manifest themselves once again in that emotional blunting, not being able to express or feel as one would normally do so. And then we have different types, catatonic and paranoid schizophrenia, which have other symptoms as well. So it's pretty serious stuff, isn't it?
It certainly is. And you mentioned that lead-in time, that there are certain things that you can look back on and say, this is what was leading to it. Mm. But I guess the problem is you can only do that in hindsight. Once a person presents with these symptoms of schizophrenia, you can look back. But what are some of those things? You mentioned as well that some people may have a predisposition to schizophrenia. Mm. What are some of the things that may trigger schizophrenia to come to the surface?
Well, characteristically, these symptoms begin in adolescence and they're followed by the development of the prodromal symptoms, okay? Now, social or environmental changes, such as going away to university or leaving home, using a substance, now that's a big one, we've heard a lot about it recently, or perhaps the death of a relative, a father or mother, and these things may precipitate the disturbing symptoms. And this then prodromal syndrome may last a year or more before there's actually overt psychotic symptoms. However, then there may be a remission. Okay, so it sort of, there is this coming and going of it. So after the first psychotic episode, a patient might gradually recover and then may function relatively normally for a long time or a period of time. Okay, and then we talk about relapse.
Mm. I mean, you mentioned there, for instance, using a substance, and we have heard a lot about people using marijuana and that leading into schizophrenia. Now, it's not the marijuana that causes that, but none of us really know if we are one of the ones that are susceptible or predisposed to schizophrenia. So, therefore, using what some people consider to be a harmless drug, and yet research would show otherwise, we don't know actually what we're dealing with there.
Very, very scary stuff. And I have seen people who've, you know, the first time that they've actually taken cannabis have had an effect that has been detrimental to them and has indeed brought on these prodromal symptoms and has sort of, you know, lurched them into this whole road of experiencing schizophrenia.
And in so many of the things that we talk about from week to week, the symptoms won't necessarily line up with two people with schizophrenia won't necessarily be displaying the same symptoms. It's not, I mean, as you mentioned before, some people think it's just one thing, but it can be a whole range of symptoms might be shown, some more severe than others in different people.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's important to remember, that we can't say, you know, although we have all these systems and criteria and so on, basically, though, we can say, well, you know, out of those things that list I talked about just a while ago, you would need, you know, three of those to get a diagnosis. So it's not just one of those things. You would actually have to, you know, at least two of, you know, those thought broadcasting and delusions and so on. And then one of the following, that is having the current period of illness lasting at least 2 weeks from the onset of noticeable change, and having had a previous period of illness lasting at least 2 weeks, and residual signs of the illness. So, you know, there are we can experience, if you like, episodes of things that we might consider to be a little bit towards schizophrenia or psychosis, but unless you've really, you know, you've been diagnosed, you've been to your GP and your psychiatrist and so on, and you know, it is you really need to do that before you sort of say, oh gosh, I think I might have schizophrenia, you know, or I might have psychosis, or someone that I know has it. It is a period of time before you can actually say, okay, this has happened so many times and there are so many symptoms, therefore we can say with a certain degree of of surety that there is something happening there.
Well, there certainly seems to be an overlap of symptoms in such a range of things that we talk about. Mm. So it's really a matter of getting that correct diagnosis before you can move forward into an effective treatment.
Mm. Yeah, diagnosis. I think that's very important. And I think people who are sitting at home with relatives or loved ones who are experiencing unusual things, it is good to go and to start, you know, to get some help, to get to go to your GP to start with. I always say GP is a good, you know, first port of call.
Okay, we'll come back and talk some more in just a moment. If you'd like to join the conversation this morning, maybe you've recognised some of those things and you'd like to talk further, then our email address is mornings@sunshinefm.ws. You can use that to email us or get in touch via Microsoft Messenger, mornings@sunshinefm.ws, or simply call us on 94841985. Rodney Olson here with Genevieve Milnes, and we're talking today about schizophrenia. I guess, Genevieve, we can talk about these sorts of things and then start to imagine that everyone around us is suffering from some form or another. But I guess in the general population, the incidence is still rather low, isn't it?
Yes, it's just 1% of the population. So 1 in 100 of the population would suffer from schizophrenia. However, that prevalence does increase as we get closer into the family. So the genetic studies strongly suggest a genetic component to the inheritance of schizophrenia. And so we've got the studies have shown that a person is likely to have schizophrenia when other members of the family have the disorder, and that the likelihood of the person's having schizophrenia is correlated with the closeness of the relationship. Okay, so first degree or second degree relative. So, for example, a sibling of a schizophrenic patient has an 8% prevalence rate, so more likely than the general population. And then a child who has a parent who has schizophrenia has a 12% chance of becoming schizophrenic. And then, of course, we can go closer even than that. So if you have a fraternal twin, that is 12%. But if you're the child of two parents who both have schizophrenia, then that rate goes up to 40%. And even stronger still is if you have a twin, identical twin with schizophrenia, it does go up to 47% from the studies. So there does seem to be an indication there that there is quite a genetic influence, and that seems to outweigh the environmental influence.
Mm. It's one of those things, I guess, when we see a number of people within the one family with these things, but it doesn't necessarily mean that if one person has it that everyone else will. It just increases those chances, doesn't it?
It does. And, I have seen instances where, you know, one twin has schizophrenia but the other doesn't. So, you know, it doesn't mean that that's going to happen. But the figures there, are certainly quite sort of impressive, aren't they? To up to 47% if you do have a twin, an identical twin with schizophrenia. I was just doing a little bit of reading about this, and a very just an interesting sideline, if you like, but eye movement dysfunction has been one of the symptoms, so the inability to follow a moving visual target accurately. Just a little interesting thing there, that so various studies have reported that in schizophrenia there are abnormal eye movements in about 50 to 85% of patients, just compared with, you know, in your general psychiatric population, about 25% there. So it is quite a lot higher, and it seems to be a trademark of schizophrenia.
Okay. Mm. Now, one thing, we sometimes hear of people putting together the term schizophrenic and bipolar. Are they similar sorts of disorders or not?
No. Bipolar is a mood disorder, mm-hmm. and it may have some similar symptoms, but is not schizophrenia.
Okay, because we've had a question from a listener who says that your radio show's most timely. I'm facing a very difficult dilemma, which I'd sincerely appreciate your help with and value the discussion that it may generate. After 6 months searching for a nanny, my wife and I finally found a girl who, in our opinion, has the credentials, the personality, and the skills to look after our two boys. They're 20 months and 3.5 years. She started yesterday, and my wife learned that she is bipolar. She's on medication and periodically sees her psychiatrist. The question, therefore, is: would you employ a carer for your children with the knowledge that they were bipolar? And if the answer to this is yes, what should we ask of her to ensure that we can have faith that she is managing her condition? Is that possible? What are your thoughts?
Oh, that's a hard one, isn't it? Look, you know, it's difficult to say. It depends how much you know about this person. If it's someone you've just hired from the agency, I think it's something you should have known before you hired this person, and it's something that the agency should have told you, because it is a medical condition, or it's a mood disorder. And certainly moods, you know, when working with children, we have to have a very stable mood so that we're not just inflicting our, you know, precarious mood onto the children. And bipolar, if it is a diagnosis, then there must be a history of highs and lows, and quite a, you know, sort of, you know, there must be enough symptoms there to get a diagnosis of bipolar. I would be extremely careful, and certainly I would have liked to have known that before I had hired this person, and then possibly... it depends, because every person is different. Look, I think there could be, some concerns.
Okay. Mm. I mean, it's difficult, because if someone is suffering from bipolar, you don't want to then just write them off and say, you know, we don't want to give you opportunity to work. Mm. But on the other hand, I guess it's that judgment call of whether working with children and being the sole carer for children while the parents are not there, I guess it's a matter of asking, is that really the line of work that someone with bipolar should take?
I think that's more the question. You know, we're certainly not saying that bipolar precludes you from working. It certainly doesn't. But it is working with someone else's children. And I've seen the pictures of and the stories and histories of mothers with bipolar and their struggles with their own children. So it is a very difficult one. And I think you really need to look into this a little bit more.
And maybe even if the girl is happy to, perhaps say, you know, can we discuss this with your caregivers and find out, you know, what their thoughts are? Because obviously the psychiatrist or this girl's GP would have a better understanding of I guess, just how deep this goes and whether there should be concerns.
Yeah, you know, if it was me, I guess I really would not like someone with a disorder, particularly an affective emotional disorder, working with my children. I mean, they have to suffer enough from me, you know, without bringing on someone who actually is diagnosed with this particular thing. Difficult one. I don't know. I think I would be going back to the agency to have a talk to them.
Yeah. Well, we've got through a fair bit of stuff, just really scratching the surface on schizophrenia. And we also want to thank the listener who wrote in with that question. While it's sort of slightly off track, it's certainly very, very worthwhile important and worthwhile talking about. So thank you very much for that. And, of course, you can always include your questions about a whole range of things whenever we get together on a Tuesday morning. We'll continue this discussion next time round. But, Genevieve, thanks so much for being here. We'll catch you next
time. Thank you. See you next time.
Bye.
For more details on this and other programs, contact 98.5 Sunshine FM, Perth, Western Australia, via the website sunshinefm.ws. All material is subject to copyright.